Excited to be back. Excited to be here this summer with all of you. I got to experience a great little bit of Grand Haven art scene yesterday. Lisa and I visited Mike and Wayne's art show. Some of you may have stopped by. We are so incredibly privileged here in this community to have such talented artists. I mean, my goodness. You all, yeah, we can. Super awesome. I'm just always impressed by that. And Andy, thank you for that meditation. And I've got to see the pictures of you in shoulder-length hair and leathers, as you called it. Pictures or it didn't happen. Okay, we're up here in Grand Haven for the summer. As I told you, we have moved back into our RV, which is giving us a wonderful opportunity to just be more connected in nature. Several of you have stopped by as you've been out or about or have seen us. Some of you have waved to us. This last couple of weeks was kind of busy and hectic and crazy. We were moving out of one winter rental and then moving kind of partially into another and then moving out of there and getting our RV set up. And while all that was going on, our daughter from Colorado flew out for a week with her best friend. And then our daughter's boyfriend drove up from Columbus, Ohio and spent some time with us. And my mom from the other side of the state, who doesn't always get to see her grandkids, decided she wanted to come over and see them too. So we had a busy, busy week. I had the chance to take my mom up and show her the campground and the beautiful park that we are at. And if you wonder where I get my sense of adventure from, those of you who ran into me with my mom while I was out saw I drove her from Holland up there on my scooter and back. She's 82. And everybody who kind of looks skeptically at me as I was doing that, I had to remind them, I mean, she grew up riding motorcycles before I was born. So she's comfortable with that and had a blast. She loved it. But we ran into somebody from C3 while we were there. So she was just getting on the scooter and we were leaving the park and came up, oh, hi. And before we left, they grabbed my mom and said, I want you to know, we just love your son at C3. We love him so much. And my mom had this confused look on her face because I haven't really talked much about you guys. No offense. I like y'all a lot. It's a little bit complicated talking about exactly what you are, what we are here. As a matter of fact, the person who was talking to my mom, when they saw the kind of the blank look on my face, they said, oh, C3. And then they had some other people with her. It's like, oh, our church community. And so they even misgendered our community, which helped a bit. Because for my mom, I prefer to her to think of me as being at a church instead of what we are. But I realized when I was thinking about that, I was like, for Pride Month, this is the perfect time for us to admit and to realize we've had conversations a long time. Since before I was hired, I mean, one of the first conversations was like, exactly what is this? Is this a spiritual community? Do we keep the word spiritual? Is it community? What is it? And I realized that after last week's talk, that we kind of exist in that beautiful state of fluidity. We are a non-binary community, right? I mean, seriously, like, we kind of have some church elements. We have some community elements. There's a sprinkle of some weird cult shit in there, too, that can kind of be weird, and that's the kind of stuff you don't tell your friends about when you're inviting them to come. Like, yeah, a couple weeks ago, we had, like, an earth altar, and it was weird, but now, it's wonderful to be in the place of not having to fit and conform, right? For those of us who grew up in a place where we were fitting into certain boxes and expectations, there's a freedom in breaking out of that, in stepping outside and in examining where you've come from in light of who you are and what you value. And here at C3, we're not here to fit into old containers. This is a community that is over 100 years old, that has spent time as a church singing hymns and baptizing and doing all the things that churches do. And many of you were a part during that time. And this community has evolved and changed and grown to the point where church kind of feels like an odd-fitting shirt that doesn't quite fit right, but it also is part of our identity and who we are. So we're not here to fit into old containers. We're here to expand and to elevate what it means to be a community, a spiritual community. And in light of that, I thought it would be fun this summer to do a series that we're calling Psychedelic Summer. And I want to preface this series and these talks by saying that we're using psychedelic in the original linguistic roots, which we're going to be talking about in just a minute. The Greek word psyche for soul or mind, and the Greek word delein, the other half of the delos, which is revealing, showing. So psychedelic literally means mind revealing, mind manifesting, soul exploring. These happen with substances, and that word is most commonly associated with substances that are used to bring about those states. But that is not all psychedelic substances. As a matter of fact, psychedelic substances are one piece of this conversation we're going to have, but I want to talk about psychedelic mindsets and practices and things that we can do to expand ourselves because it's available to each and every one of us. So I want to start first with a little bit of a history. We're going to, throughout the coming weeks, I'm fascinated with the 60s and with the birth of the psychedelic movement and the beatniks. I added one more bucket list time travel thing to my list this morning in pre-talk when Leslie shared about the first time that she dropped acid in 1963 in San Francisco. And I realized that now I want to go to 1963 in San Francisco and drop acid with Leslie. That I never knew that that was a thing that I wanted to do. So let's get a little bit of history on here. There's a couple of names I'm going to introduce you to today. First is Humphrey Osmond, and then the second is Aldous Huxley. Some of you might be familiar with the second. Humphrey Osmond was a psychiatrist. He was a researcher and professor of psychology at the University of Alabama. And in the 50s, he was a psychiatrist in the Navy during World War II. And then after the war, his service began conducting research on the use of hallucinogenic drugs, specifically for people with extreme depression, mental illness, and substance abuse. So as a psychiatrist, he was very interested in helping his patients achieve some level of relief from the things that they were experiencing. And he ran across Aldous Huxley in the 50s, who wrote this book called The Doors of Perceptions. Anybody read The Doors of Perception? A couple of you have. And by the way, if you want a little bit of trivia there, if you've heard of a little band called The Doors, that's where they got their name from. So Aldous Huxley, the author of The Doors and renowned for his other books, Brave New World, another fantastic book, 1932, and The Doors of Perception that he wrote in 54. So Osmond was known to supply Huxley with substances such as LSD and mescaline for the use in his clinical treatments with his patients. And together they worked to come up with a word to describe the effects, because here they are on the forefront of this new frontier, which is kind of strange to think about, that there was a time in our country's history in the early 50s where these substances and the use of psychedelic substances were not as commonly known as it is today, so much so that there was not a word to describe what this experience was. So they had to come up with a word to say what it was that they were achieving or experiencing with patients and within themselves as they were taking these substances. So Huxley came up with a word that he used. Both of them took these Greek root words and kind of played word salad and merged them together to create these words. Huxley, being the writer, you would have expected him to come up with something a little better. He came up with the Greek word phanerothine, and both of them, because of the era I think that they lived in, had to come up with a marketing jingle to go along with it, I think, to prove the validity of their term. And Huxley came up with, to make this mundane world sublime, take half a gram of phanerothine. To make this mundane world sublime, take half a gram of phanerothine. And those Greek words that he used, they're similar to the other Greek words, the first part meaning to show the spirit or to reveal the spirit within was kind of what those Greek words meant. Osmond, on the other hand, his contribution was the word that has stuck, psychedelic. And as we already described, he used the word for psyche, spirit or soul or mind, and daylane, and combined those two words. And his jingle was, to fathom hell or soar angelic, just take a pinch of psychedelic. I'm not sure that they were really good at the marketing jingles, to be honest there. I'm picturing a Saturday morning commercial for that. And to fathom hell or soar angelic, take just a pinch of psychedelic. So they came up with this word and they began to use it in the development of their practices as they worked with their patients. Timothy Leary came on the scene and then the rest kind of expanded and grew from there. But there were a lot of people in the 50s and in the 60s that as these substances and as these practices began to become more popular, started to weigh in on what it was that people were experiencing. Because there was a lot of fear. Anybody who grew up in the 60s and in the aftermath of the war on drugs remembers the fear. And as a matter of fact, when I asked this morning in pre-talk, and we can do it again in talk back, like when you think of the word psychedelic or a psychedelic experience, what things come to mind? And probably just as many of you can come up with lists of some really, really bad stories and trips, either yourself personally, friends, or relatives, as you can talk about the positives that are happening in research today. This is not a very, very clear black and white issue that is like, oh, this is easy. This is a complicated thing to talk about. Terence McKenna, who is one of the early psychedelic fathers, he said that life lived in the absence of the psychedelic experience that primordial shamanism is based on is a life trivialized, life denied, a life enslaved to the ego. He said, if you're not any use that word in the context of primordial shamanism, because Terence McKenna and many others knew that this psychedelic experience that we're talking about, while it's a newer term and the word is newer and to our generation, this experience, this mindset, this practice is definitely not new. For centuries, for millennia, almost every culture that has developed, every society, has some connection with substances that have been used in ritualized or spiritual ways to bring about altered states of consciousness or to undergo spiritual or ritual practices or rites of passage. Richard Rohr, Bill Plotkin, and others we'll talk about how we have lost so much in our society today, in our culture, our modern Western culture, by the loss of ritualized rites of passage. We don't have these elders, people within our society, to help guide us through transformative practices today. And what does it look like now? What it looks like now is that you have a generation of young people who are so desperate for something that they're pursuing substances that are powerful and have the potential to be dangerous. And they're doing so in a way that they're on their own because we have lost the ability to have these kind of collective conversations. Aldous Huxley, in The Doors of Perception, he said, "Most live lives that are at worst so pitiful and at best so monotonous, poor and limited, that the urge to escape, the longing to transcend themselves, if only for a few moments, is and always has been one of the principles, appetites of the soul." This is not new, he said. This desire to mind the depths of what's in here, to explore the psyche, to reveal hidden depths of ourselves, to transcend the society that we have around us, this is a very human tendency. Not all of us experience it to the same degree. And to be clear, in this series, we're going to be talking briefly about psychedelic substances, but I want to talk more about a psychedelic mindset, which is, how do we create space to explore our inner world? Do we have practices to reveal that which is hidden within? And if you don't believe that there's hidden depths to you, well, perhaps just a pinch of psychedelic might wake you up. Those who have taken substances are oftentimes fascinated by what Aldous Huxley calls this widening or this opening of the doors of perception. The way he describes it is that all of us are human beings going through this world, but we have this very limiting filter on the way that we encounter things, because at any one moment, there's hundreds of faces looking at me. I'm thinking about the temperature in the room. There's things happening outside. We're stimulated by all of these experiences all the way around us. And our brain, for the purposes of not becoming overwhelmed, developed an evolutionary adaptation. It developed the ability to filter out and to reduce down, to limit our perception. And that's a very beneficial trait. If we saw and heard and felt everything all the time, we would go crazy. It's too much. It's way too much. Some of you have felt that moment in just like stimulation, like, don't touch me, turn off the music. I'm just overstimulated right now. So psychedelics, substances, and psychedelic experiences widen, open those doors of perception. Another example would be kind of like, for those of you who are familiar with cameras, we use this as an example in pre-talk. Because somebody said, if these substances bring about these states, but you can achieve these states through other means, like meditation and stuff, is it natural or is it unnatural? And these are valid questions. And we have to ask ourselves, what is it we're trying to achieve here? So if you can achieve the same thing through 30 years of meditation, but then you can also take a substance and get to the same state in some cases that a meditation practitioner can achieve after decades of that, is that like a shortcut? Is that a workaround? And is that always beneficial? Are there dangers in taking that shortcut? And these are, again, valid questions that are worth asking. But if you took, for example, a vase of flowers. And in a dark room, you had a vase of flowers. And over here, we had our camera and our tripod set up. Those of you who are familiar with cameras know that there's two ways to accomplish getting this picture properly exposed. Because if it's dark and your aperture is very closed, very small, the amount of light that's coming into that camera lens, that sensor, is small, you have to open the lens and keep it open longer so that all of those light photons can expose, and maybe over several seconds, you can get the proper exposure of that vase of flowers. Or you can open your aperture wider, letting in more light. And as you do, you open that lens, but it only has to stay open a fraction of a second. So that's a good way to think about some of these substances and practices, that these are not the end-all, be-all. This is not something that if you don't do this or if you're not willing to go down this road, you can't achieve these states. That's just simply not true. There are ways that you can expand your consciousness in very simple, tangible ways. Going for a walk in the woods is a psychedelic, or I should say, can be a psychedelic experience. It can be mind-expanding, soul-revealing, if we allow ourselves to be exposed to it, if we open up our doors of perception. You see, it's about creating space to listen to what is happening in your inner world. Kent, a couple weeks ago, talked about, he used the language of zooming in and zooming out. I love that language, right? There's times we need to zoom right in on things, and then sometimes we need to zoom way out. Psychedelic experiences are fantastic for that kind of perspective, because you can have these incredible moments of feeling like you have shrunk down and are navigating the cells inside that little leaf on your plant, and you can sit there staring at that plant for what feels like hours and be small and microscopic. And then in the next moment, you can zoom all the way out and you're contemplating the breadth and depth and size of our universe. That zooming in and zooming out, that perspective. So what I want to encourage us in this series and through these talks is to find ways to create the space in our lives to go within. If we're talking about psychedelic substances, and anytime I talk about substances, these substances, when used to escape, can be very dangerous. If we're using drugs, and I'm including any category of drugs, alcohol, sex, food, or whatever else, when we use them to escape reality, to step away from reality, we become more disconnected from the world around us. But if we do a mindfulness meditation group, if we begin a practice of regular contemplation, if we go on a silent retreat, if we do one mindful eating meal a week, if we do some of these things, these practices in our life, we begin to find that as we create the space, all of a sudden this inner world, this inner landscape, doesn't become something that is off limits to us. It becomes rich with depths of things to explore, ways to grow. As Ram Dass was famous for saying, the more quiet you become, the more you can hear. And that goes true, that same thing is true for our inner world, our inner landscape. We surround ourselves more often than not with the noise of this world. And it's getting noisier all the time, isn't it? There's a lot of things coming at us from all directions. I would say that each and every single person in here is capable of having transformative, psychedelic experiences with or without substances for the purposes of going within and seeing what's there. There are doorways to deeper experiences and expanded awareness that are accessible to us here and now. It starts by reclaiming sometimes words that can get loaded down with baggage, words like psychedelic. It starts by recognizing that you and I are complicated beings and that this inner landscape of our soul, or for those of you who want to just keep it in the purely mental and physical realm, this hidden landscape of our mind contains so much that we don't think about or explore because we're not aware that it's there. Have you ever had a moment where somebody said something to you and you sort of snapped and lashed out at them, and then in the moment afterwards you're like, where the hell did that come from? And then you talk about it to your therapist, and over a couple months you realize, like, oh, wow, there was this really, really big thing that was in there, and I had no clue it was there. That's the power of self-examination. That's the power of taking the time to look within. And I would hope first that in the very beginning of the series that I can make the case to you that this examined life is worth pursuing in whatever way feels most safe and meaningful and healthy for you. Taking the time to examine, to explore, to go within, and to see what's there is a worthwhile practice. Not only is it worthwhile, I think it's something that is sadly lacking in our society. I was in another life a youth pastor, and Lisa and I have always been drawn to young people and young adults. And we have a couple ourselves, 24 and 21 are our two daughters. And you don't have to have a lot of conversations with kids that age. Some of you have grandkids around that age, or nieces or nephews. If you want an interesting conversation, have some conversations around this subject. Ask what is accessible and available to them, what experiences they have had, what those experiences were like, what stories they've heard, and what all of that means to them. I'm heartbroken that so many people in these generations coming up are so interested. They're so drawn to pursuing this inner work, but they have no place to go, and they're stumbling blindly. And so their experiences with psychedelics is something that's handed to them at a festival or something they take at a concert, and they have all these negative experiences, and it's not at all psychedelic because there's no mind revealing or soul exploration. It's escapism. It's not transcending. It's escaping reality. And when we use these experiences as a way to escape reality, we become even more disconnected. We're trying to draw closer. We're trying to move into the source of all things. So, psychedelic experiences are not about getting out of your head. Quite the contrary, it is about getting into your whole self. So I want to take a moment and look ahead for just a little bit as we think about where we're going in this series in the summer, and I want to give you a few heads up on some of the speakers that we have, because we have a really, really cool lineup of conversation on that. Starting next week, Allison Paradise has been with us before. Allison Paradise holds neuroscience degrees from both Brown and Harvard, if you've heard of those. And I'm guessing that she probably has a thing or two to say about exploration of our psyche. She's going to be bringing some conversation to that. We have Michael DeWilde, who is a regular here and has more than a passing fascination with this subject as well. We're going to be talking about, because we are still in the month of June, we're going to be bringing in these pride themes, these themes of fluidity and liberation as an act of expansion. Next month is International Drag Day on July 16th, and we're going to be exploring how do performance and self-invention and fluidity help us access deeper truths about ourselves, and what do those experiences reveal about the hidden depths of ourselves. I just finished watching last night Pee-wee as Himself, the new documentary about Paul Rubens. Anybody seen that one on HBO? Fascinating. Highly, highly encourage you to watch that one if you want to watch that. It revealed to me just how much our society has grown, but how much hunger there is for conversations that move us beyond the binary, that move us past these simple, puritanical, moralistic, black or white, right or wrong, and get us into touch with the deeper parts of our psyche and the parts of ourselves that are growing and revealing and expanding. So here's your invitation this week, and then we'll have Molly come back up. The invitation for you is this: to tune in and to drop in, to wake up to what your soul or your psyche, whatever language feels best for you, to reveal what it is it's trying to say. There's parts of our mental house that have closets that haven't been opened in decades. There's experiences that we've had that we've never really processed. And sure, some of us tend to take that avoidant approach, which is out of sight, out of mind, and put it up in a shelf really, really high and tuck it away and don't think about it. But we know that those things come out one way or another. So we're going to be looking at ways that we can tune into what's happening, how we can listen to what our spirit is saying, and how we can connect with what is deepest and truest in us and in the world around us. It's going to be a fun summer. Excited to share it with you. Namaste. Thank you.